जयम विष्णु परमात्मा परिभ्राजिकाचार्य सत्र सात समाज सुनेंगे इसे इसी भक्ति विदंत स्वामी
श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद श्री चैतन्य चैतामृत की जय। गोप प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरी टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा।
नमः विष्णु बदाय कृष्ण विष्णु बदाय समाते जब तक स्वामी तीन नमः विष्णु बदाय कृष्ण विष्णु बदाय समाते अलग स्वामी तीन नमः नमः विष्णु बदाय कृष्ण विष्णु बदाय समाते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी तीन नमः नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवाणी पश्चात आदेश तरिणे जय श्री कृष्ण। सो हरे कृष्ण। Today we are reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Lord instructs Sanatan Goswami. This is Madhya Lila, chapter 20, text 159-62. So there we have the verse 162 with the purport. So I start with 159, I just read it. So 159, Brahma Angakanti Tandra Nirvishesha Prakashe Suryayena Charma Chakshe Jyotirmaya Bhashe. Translation: the manifestation of the impersonal Brahman effulgence, which is without variety, is the rays of Krishna's bodily effulgence. It is exactly like the sun. When the sun is seen by our ordinary eyes, it appears to consist simply of effulgence. So numbers 160. This is from the Brahma Samhita. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti svashesha visudhadi vibhuti bhinnam tad brahmanishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation: I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete, and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. Purport: this verse is quoted from the Brahma Samhita 540. For an explanation, refer to Adi Lila, chapter 2, verse 14. Then again, 61. Paramatma yenho tenho Krishna eka ansho atmar atma hoye Krishna sarva avatangsho. Translation: the Paramatma, the Supersoul feature, is a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original soul of all living entities. Krishna is the source of the Paramatma. And then to this verse, let's see, please repeat. Krishnam enam avehi tvam atmanam akila atmanam jagat hitaya saha api atra Dehi Iva Abhati Mayayam Krishnam Enam Avehi Tvam. Krishnam Enam Avehi Tvam. Atmanam Akhilatmanam. Atmanam Akhilatmanam. Jagadhitaya sopyatra. Jagadhitaya sopyatra. Dehi vabhati mayaya. Dehi vabhuti. Oh, sorry. Dehi vabhati mayaya. Krishnam enam avehi tvam. Atmanam akhilatmanam jagadhitaya sopyatra Dehi va bhati mayaya. Next. Jagaditaya sopyatra deva bhati mayaya krishnam enam avehitvam atmanam akilatmanam jagaditaya sopyatra deva bhati mayaya. Krishna me nama vehitvam atmanam jagadhitaya sopyatra deva bhati mayaya. Krishna me nama vehitvam Atmanam akilatmanam jagaditaya sopyatra dehi vabhati mayaya. Krishnam, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, tenam, this, avehi, just try to understand. You, Atmanam, the soul, Akila Atmanam, of all living entities, Jagat Hitaya, the benefit of the whole universe, Saha, he, Api, certainly, Atra, here, Dehi, a human being, Iva, like, Abhati, appears, Mayaya, by his internal potency. Translation and purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai. You should know Krishna, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking, you should know Krishna to be the original soul of all Atmas, living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his own internal potency. Purport. This is a quotation from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.55. Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami why Krishna was so beloved by the residents of Vrindavan, who loved him even more than their own offspring or life itself. At that time, Shukadeva Goswami replied that everyone's Atma or soul is very, very dear, especially to all living entities who have accepted material bodies. But the Atma, the spirit soul, is part and parcel of Krishna. For this reason, Krishna is very dear to every living entity. Everyone's body is very dear to oneself, and one wants to protect the body by all means because within the body the soul is living. Due to the intimate relationship between the soul and the body is important and dear to everyone. Similarly, the soul, being part and parcel of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is very, very dear to all living entities. Unfortunately, the soul forgets his constitutional position and thinks he is only the body, deha atma buddhi. Thus the soul is subjected to the rules and regulations of material nature. When a living entity, by his intelligence, reawakens his attraction to Krishna, he can understand that he is not the body, but part and parcel of Krishna. Thus, filled with knowledge, he no longer labors under attachment to the body, and everything related to the body. Janasya moho yamahamameti. Material existence wherein one thinks I am the body and think that this belongs to me is also illusory. One must redirect his attraction to Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-7 states Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatya Shubhairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So the verse for today here is, you should know Krishna to be the original soul of all Atmas, living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his own internal potency.
So, Hare Krishna. So, today I'm leaving and I feel a little bit sorry about that. This is the 10th year I come here to teach a course at the Bhaktivedanta College. And it's always wonderful for me to take a break from the academic life and just be together with devotees and take prasadam and just be a devotee. So I'm a little bit sad, but please give me your blessing so I can bring your love and affection and the mercy of Krishna and Radha with me to cold Sweden. So here we have a very particular situation where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching Sanatana Goswami. And the verse is quite interesting in that sense, because it says, you should know Krishna to be the original soul of all Atmas for the benefit of the whole universe. He has, Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his own eternal potency, as if he was speaking to about someone else. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because his role is in this lila is to be the servant of Krishna and to show how to worship Krishna, then he's talking about himself as he is like in third person. So the situation here is Sanatana Goswami was as we know a very elevated person, not only in terms of being born in a Brahmin family, I mean, socially was a very from a high caste, but then in the Muslim government in those days in West Bengal, he became the minister of the Muslim. That was quite common in those days because the Muslims many times the Muslim rulers were Afghans or Turks or coming from various parts of the Middle East. Persian was there. Kind of language of the refined language, like for Hindus it's Sanskrit, for Muslims were Persian. So they had kind of quite a different culture, and in order to rule the Hindus, they needed to have kind of middlemen. So that's why they used to employ Brahmins and Kayastas and different kind. Kayastas were those who were writing, the secretaries who knew many languages and like that. So Sanatana Goswami had become one of the minister of the Shah, and so he was in a very elevated position. He was very very smart, obviously, and even intellectually, philosophically, very well equipped. Then suddenly he became attracted to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which put him in great trouble. With the Shah, who obviously needed him to rule the kingdom. So suddenly Sanatana Goswami became very absorbed in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He hired pandits to come to his home, and slowly he started to neglect his duties and develop detachment, which is also something which is mentioned here. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janatya
janayatya shubhairagyam gyanam chayat ahaitukam. Ahaitukam, causelessly, by performing devotional service, bhakti yoga, then this natural jnana, this vairagya, this detachment, increases. Causelessly. I mean, it's not really causelessly in the sense that Krishna give that mercy so that one becomes a little bit, kind of see one's life a little bit from a distance, if you understand what I mean. Like, when you're in the middle of life and struggling for survival, most living entities in this universe, they are struggling to survive. So you're kind of in the middle of it. But then, by the mercy of Krishna, you kind of can step back a little bit, look at yourself from a distance, and start ask questions. What I'm doing, really? Where I'm going? Who am I? These kind of questions. So Sanatana Goswami was, of course, Sanatana Goswami is a pure devotee, so you have all these kind of pastimes where devotees awaken to Krishna consciousness. Obviously, their associates, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they just Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati explained that once when devotees were asking why do devotees sometimes great devotees are born in very low family or they kind of like Sanatana Goswami born in a Brahmin family then associating with the Yavanas, the meat eaters, the Muslims, and kind of. Forget, live in a situation of forgetfulness, dealing with politics and social issues for some time, and then again reawaken to Krishna consciousness. Then he was making the point that Krishna sometimes places devotees in these circumstances to give an example, to inspire people from different groups, like Prahlad Maharaj. He was born in a family of demons. Associated with demons, that's the worst association you can ever get if you complain sometimes about your family or whatever. So his family was demons and his father was hating Vishnu. I mean, he wanted to kill the Lord. So, but he was born in that family, and then because of his association, then he became the king of the demons, and then by association he was giving a good example. So many people, many demons were becoming inspired and becoming positive to worshipping the Supreme. So Krishna places devotees in various circumstances. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is another example, born in a Shakta family, and then like around 30, 35 years, awakening to Krishna consciousness and going through a process of conversion. So Sanatana Goswami was going through that process, and then the Shah got angry, of course, and said, what are you doing? So he sent his spies to the house of Sanatana Goswami. He saw that he was not sick, as he was saying. He was sending doctors and saying, I'm very I can't help you now, sorry. So he was seeing that he was just sitting there listening to the Bhagavatam and learning Sanskrit, you know, kind of getting... He knew Sanskrit, but he was kind of developing the Bhagavat understanding of the Sanskrit language. Because Sanskrit has different, depending on which school you're practicing, philosophical school, so the Sanskrit has a different meaning, so to speak. So the Vaishnava way of understanding the verses of Sanskrit is the, you know, has a Vaishnava philosophy behind it. So even when you translate words, the Vaishnava do it in a certain way. So he was doing that. Finally, some or other, he succeeded and escaped, and he brought his money with these 7,000 gold coins. In those days, if you were working for in a high position, you would get a share. There was the tax system of the Muslims, so the Hindus would go out collect taxes, and they would take a share. Sometimes 50%, sometimes 20%, depends on what kind of deal you had. So he had collected this enormous amount of wealth, 7,000 gold coins, which is a lot of money. I mean, even today, if you have 7,000 gold coins, you're done for life. Your retirement, you know, everything. You don't have to worry about anything, basically, right? 7,000 gold coins. So even in those days, that was a lot of money. So he was kind of carried that with him. So the Shah was... put him in prison with the gold coins. Somehow he was merciful, so
So he was going with a bag full of, you know, to jail, to the cell in the jail. So then he wanted to escape. Of course, he wanted to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was talking to the jail keeper, and then he was addressing me like a brother. That's a very Bengali way of, even if you go to Bengal, everybody is a member of the family, right? Like in Bengal, if you want the Rikshawala, you know, Baba, you know, like Baba is like father. Or in Bangladesh, I was studying Bengali in Dhaka, so everybody is Kaka. You know, Kaka means uncle. So you know, just a Rikshawala, you want a Rikshawala, so Kaka, you know, uncle. And in Bengali is Baba, you know, like father. If he's an older, otherwise Bhai, you know, brother. So everybody is a Bhai, everybody is a brother, sister, uncles, aunts, mothers, ma, you know. So they have this kind of relationship. So I was telling, you're a brother to me, you know, we are Bengalis, we are born in the same, I mean, it was not maybe Bengali, but we are living here in Bengal. So we belong to the same family. And you are a very elevated, learned Muslim. So you see my situation. Actually, I've been in prison here, and I want to escape from the prison to go to Mecca, and do my Hajj, my pilgrimage. So please, you know, understand my situation. So that's what he was, a minister, so he was very smart, because if you talk to a Muslim and tell, you know, I want to, you know, escape or do something to go to the Mecca. Which is the most pious thing a Muslim can do, to go to, you know, the pilgrimage. So then the Muslim, you know, he's, what can he say? You know, he wants to go to Mecca. It's a very pious activity. So he was already kind of friendly, thinking positively about it. And then, but he was not really convinced 100%. So then he said, "All right, I give you 7,000 gold coins as an extra plus. You do a pious activity. You let me go to Mecca, which is the best thing a Muslim can ever do. So I'm a Hindu, but I do, you know, I follow your religion, and I give you 7,000 gold coins. That's an offer you cannot refuse, right?" So then the Muslim said, "All right, but I'm still very afraid, because if the Shah find out that I let you go, you know what happens." So then he said, "Don't worry, you know, you just tell the Shah that I had to go out to do my needs. In those days, there were no toilets in the prisons. They didn't have the facilities like that. Nowadays prisons are very comfortable. I mean, you have very nice facilities. Those days were a little rough. So I just went out to do my needs to the Ganga. Well, that was the way they're doing it in those days. And then I kind of jump into the Ganga, draw myself. Hindus, they do like that sometimes. They just drown in the Ganga, go back to Godhead. So then the Shah will be happy. You don't have to worry. Couldn't find a body afterwards. Finished." And he had heavy chains. You know, those days you had really heavy. So because of the chains, I was kind of sinking down and drowned. So the Muslim was pacified. So he just got him out. And then he was without money. So he was feeling relieved, because already at the time he was kind of, you know, the process of detachment. So he wasn't really attached anymore to his money. The only thing he worried about was to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he kind of went out and he got his servant, Ishani, to follow. And then they went, they had to cross some hilly region. So the servant had saved 8 coins of gold in his pocket without telling Sanatana Goswami. So they went to a kind of hotel for the night. And the hotel owner, he had a palm reader that could read the future. And he said, "Somebody will come tonight with 8 gold coins." So then the owner was thinking, what do you do with someone that has 8 gold coins? And he was not really a very honest person. So he thought, "All right, let me kill him, get the coins, get rid of the body, and my day is done. I got my extra profit." Very materialistic kind of thinking. So when Sanatana Goswami came with his servant, he was very friendly to him. "Oh, sir, thank you for coming, honoring this house. I'm so happy you came. I'm so glad. So please, servants, bring everything, all food he wants. You just, anything you want, I just give you. And then, oh, here's the best room of the hotel. It's all yours. You do what you want. Consider this your very home. So Sanatana Goswami, you know, he kind of accepted that. But then later on, he was kind of thinking, why this guy is so friendly? I mean, this is not the normal way. Especially this was a hotel in the middle of nowhere. So how could that be so friendly? So then he started thinking, because, you know, he's smart. He must have found out something. He must want from me something. So then he asked his servants, do you have anything of value? And the servant didn't want to tell, but finally he admitted, yeah, well, out of the thousands of coins you had, I kind of took a few, put in my pocket. So I have 8 gold coins. So then the Sanatana Goswami said, you're risking our lives. I mean, these guys must know about it. So, and then he took the coins, 7 coins, he left one with the servant. Then he went to the owner and said, please accept this money, to take it. I just don't want to have it. So then the owner was very moved and said, why are you giving that to me? And he said, it's just a burden, so please accept it. Help me. So then the owner said, all right, thank you. I actually was planning to kill you. I knew you had gold coins, so I was, you know, just waiting that you fell asleep and then do my job and get your money. But I'm very moved by your honesty. I mean, I never seen somebody like that coming, you know, honestly offering me money like this. So keep your coins. I don't want that. I get my servants to help you to cross the hills. It was a hilly area. And, let's leave it at that. And Sanatana Goswami said, no, please help me. You know, if you don't take this money, somebody else will kill me later on to get the money out of me. So please save my life, take the gold coins and do whatever you want. So then the owner said, all right. And then they went. So he gave some servants and helped Sanatana Goswami to cross the hills and go on the other side and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Sanatana Goswami told the servant, you take the last coin, you go home, and they continued on his own. So this is, you know, just before we're coming to this point. So now we have the situation where Sanatana Goswami, he pleases Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by, you read the stories in the previous verses, by giving up even the, because someone was giving him, when he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was dressing like a Sufi, a dervish, actually, that's the word, a Muslim mystic, dervish. You know the dervishes were? So that's kind of the Sufi, kind of Sufi way to say, kind of Babaji, you know. So the dervishes normally, they're, you know, dressed very poorly. They're mystics and they're just wandering. So Sanatana Goswami came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in that dress because he didn't want to draw any attention, right? He didn't want to have any trouble because that was a Muslim, in those days it was a Muslim, there was a Muslim rule, the Mughals, right? So whenever you have to go long distances, you always have to do with Muslim rulers, Muslim tax collectors, Muslim soldiers, Muslim this and that. So it was very practical if you dressed like a Muslim, right? Nobody would bother to ask you too many questions. And he was the minister of the Nawab of Bengal, so you can imagine he had really to have a low profile. And they were looking for him. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him to ask his some of his devotees, please dress him properly as a gentleman. So he got a very nice woolen chador. So ultimately, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was kind of observing him. And Sanatana Goswami at some point was seeing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was looking at his woolen chador that was a, you know, kind of fancy one. And then he realized, all right, you know, it's not proper. So he went to the ghat and he exchanged this nice woolen chador with, you know, just the clothes. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very pleased. And the point here is also that Sanatana Goswami came from a very wealthy, he was extremely opulent. He was very rich, wealthy, coming from the top of the top that was achievable in those days. And then, particularly in this case, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to see that Sanatana Goswami gave everything up, right? Because if you don't have anything, then you don't have to worry about it, right? You're naturally humble. But if you come from a very high, you know, you're intelligent, you're educated, you have everything anybody can dream of, and then you want to perform devotional service, you have to prove yourself. You have to show that you're not attached to it. Then you might use it in Krishna service. That's another point. But you have to cross the test. You have to show that you actually are ready to offer everything for the service of Krishna. So Sanatana Goswami did that, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased. So then when he started to instruct him. So the first two verses we read before the last one, were about the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let me see. We started with 59, right? Brahma Anga Kanti Tanra Nivishesha Prakash Surya Yena Charma Chaksha Jyoti Maya Bhasha. So, there is a word here which should be familiar to us. Nivishesha, right? Brahma Anga Kanti Tanra Nirvishesha Prakasha Surya Yena Charma Chaksha Jyoti Maya Bhasha. Nirvishesha. We have it, right? Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashatya Desha Tarine. So, Nirvishesha. What does Nirvishesha mean? Sorry? No distinction, right? Nir means not, Vishesha distinction. Vishesha, the word Vishesha is very important, just to have a little philosophical, a little bit explanation here. Vishesha is a very important word in Vaishnava philosophy. Just a little parenthesis. When Shankara started to actually establish what we call Mayavad philosophy, Advaita Vedanta, so his idea was that Brahma is everything, right? There is only one reality, an absolute reality, which is Brahman. So Maya, the energy, the illusion, this is something external, is unreal in the sense that it's not, you know, because everything material has a beginning and an end and decays and dies. So even floors and stones in, you know, it may take millions of years, but ultimately they are being dissolved in atoms and rebuilt and reconstituted. So everything is made of atoms and molecules that aggregate, dissolves in different combination, ages after ages, kalpa after kalpa. So therefore, matter cannot be reality. In that sense, matter is unreal. The only reality is Brahman. This kind of, in this verse, is explained as like the effulgence of the sun. A kind of formless energy that cannot be described, cannot be perceived with our senses, but really underlies everything. So beyond matter, you have Brahman. Enlightenment means to just see Brahman, to see beyond the kind of the curtains that make us blind. So why Shankara was making this point was because because reality is Brahman, and the ultimate truth must be eternal, must be real, must be full of consciousness, must be unchangeable, right? Unchangeable, very important. The absolute truth cannot be changing, because changing from better to worst or in different conditions. Otherwise, it's imperfect. Perfection must be unchangeable, eternal, perfect, complete, right? Vaishnavism was always there. Vaishnavism is a very old tradition, obviously, but it went through its own ups and downs in the history of Indian philosophy. So those days Buddhism was very prominent, then Shankara came with Mayavad. So then the Vaishnava had to think for a couple of centuries, basically, you know, how to deal with that. You know, how to deal with the point of Shankara that the absolute truth, formless, must be unchanging, must be perfect, must be complete, and the material energy is just external, is temporary, is fallible, is just the opposite, right? So then Madhava came with this idea of Vishesha. so
That means and then gradually vishesha, and then the idea of transformational energy. So the Vaishnavas didn't want to touch Shankara's basic foundational idea that the supreme truth must be unchangeable, perfect, complete, and so on. They didn't want to change that, but they had to explain the link between that and the material energy. They had to explain that link and prove also that the material energy was real. Because the Vaishnava, our philosophy is that the material, it's an energy, it's something real, it's something substantial. It's not just a dream. So to do that, Madhvacharya, Ramanuja, basically all the Vaishnavas, devotees, they developed the idea of Parinama, the idea that Krishna is complete and supreme, but he has different energies. And that was the key, actually, to make the connection. So we can say that this floor is Krishna, because everything is Krishna, Sava Kaminam Brahman, everything is Krishna. But this is the external energy of Krishna. Krishna has unlimited potencies. One of them is the Bahiranga Shakti, his external potency. Then he has his internal potency, which is the one which is fully displayed in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world. Then there is a mill, Antaranga. Tatashta Shakti, that's us. That's a marginal energy, all the living entities in between. Small, spiritual, but very tiny. So that was a breakthrough. Because then, in this way, you could explain how everything is real. Even the material energy is real. It's an energy of Krishna, but it's a transformation of his internal energy. And there are many ways to explain it, just like cows with milk. The cows gives milk, but when you drink the milk, you're not drinking the cow. And the idea of the spider and the net. The spider makes a net. The net is the spider, comes from the body of the spider. But you can touch the net, you're not touching the spider, right? And so on and so forth. So that was a genius. That was really genius. And then we have the explanation, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining the philosophy with the trees. You can take a tree. If you cut the tree, you can make a chair. Right there, we have a chair. The chair is made of wood, but it's not the tree. It's a transformation, of that energy of the tree in a different form, in a different shape. So then, in order to even specify that even more, because when you talk about material energy, you're talking about energies. And an energy is something that kind of flows, something big. And which is, you can also, like we say, earth, water, fire, the elements of nature, right? But that can give you the idea that material energy is kind of undifferentiated. There are elements, right? Big elements. Or just jivas. Well, there are trillions of jivas, right? There are unlimited jivas. And they're all the same, like every jiva is a particle of spiritual energy. So that's where Vaishesha comes in. Vaishesha. Vaishesha means that every single jiva, every single atom, every single has particular, specific, individual properties that are entirely unique. That's Vaishesha. So you might have two jivas, or even two atoms. But each of them will have certain unique qualities that are specific to that particular object. And in terms of souls, every single jiva, although they have the same, they are the same energy, they're spiritual energy, but every jiva will have certain kind of unique qualities, characteristics that make it absolutely unique. There will be no two of them which will be equal in all ways. That was the next level, to explain how these energies, although they come from the same source, just like the sun, the particle of the sun. When we make when we talk about this example with the rays of the sun and the particle of the sun, we're talking about, it seems like all the particles of the sun are the same, right? But in reality, there are different atoms, there are different particles. If you study them carefully, they have some small different varieties. So all the
Vaishesha was a way to go even further and to show that Krishna is not only full of qualities, but all his energies are full of qualities, are full of individuality. They are unique, and that should be appreciated. So Srila Prabhupada made this point very, very, very strongly. Once I was serving at in Krishna's court. There was a recording studio. So the first thing as a bhakta that I learned was the pastime when Prabhupada was recording his kirtans, and the devotees were explaining to Prabhupada how, you know, the stereo system works from mono to stereo. That was in the 80s. So devotees were getting, you know, fancy equipment. So then they were explaining to Prabhupada, we have two microphones here, you know, for left and right. But then ultimately when we mix it, and we mix your voice and instruments, we kind of merge them together, you know, and we create a kind of a picture of sound where different sounds are mixed, you know, mixed and merged. So Prabhupada said, merged? Never. We don't merge anything here. So that was teaching this principle that everything, you cannot merge anything because everything is actually unique. Even sound, you know, you may think you're merging something, but actually nothing really merges. In the Nectar of Devotion, we hear in the introduction that just as the impersonalist used the example of merging, like when you are a particle of Brahman, you are like a drop of water. When you throw it in the ocean, it becomes one with the ocean. You can't distinguish one particle from the other, right? And then Rupa Goswami gave you the example, but look at the fishes and the sharks. It looks like the ocean is just one mass of particles of water. But look, there are so many sharks, there are so many fishes there swimming. So the fishes and the sharks, they are, you know, the devotees. They are individuals. It looks like from the outside, when you don't look at it carefully, that is just a body of water. But there are so many living entities there. There are so many. So let me get a little bit, say a few words about the verse of today. So Krishna is very dear to everyone, and that's why we love our bodies. So we can love our bodies. Seems like saying. That means that every living entity has a propensity to love. If we don't love Krishna, if we don't love God, then we have to love whatever is close to us. There is a potency of an energy of affection. We have to use that some way or the other. So if we don't use it for God, so what is the closest to us? The body, right? Next to it, what's there? Well, I mean, I'm thinking about, still, I mean, the family comes next. The mind, right? So we love our mind. Oh, we love our thoughts. Beautiful, you know, just thinking in our minds. It's such an ecstasy. Nobody looks. It's your own private TV set. So we enjoy that, right? Or we enjoy using our intelligence. This is, you know, if you do intellectual work, you're very attached to your intelligence. How smart I am. I mean, this thought, nobody had that before. It's unique, you know. That's how scholars work. They have to produce something unique. You know? And sometimes become very proud because of that. Then we get attached to what? The false ego, right? I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a British, American, whatever. You know, different identities we might have. And then comes the family, as we said. So we have to love something. If we don't have anything to love, like if you go in the big cities, Paris, Stockholm, then you have your dog. You know, and you see these ladies, some or other, I don't know why, but they have all these small, all sizes of dogs. In Stockholm are very small, you know, like. Very affectionate to the dogs. They give them clothes, very fancy. They're a kind of fashion, you know, dog fashion. So you have different kind. And then you see the love is pouring like that. If they don't have a dog, they have a car. You know, they use so much time and money polishing their cars. Some people just, all their free time is going to build cars. So and so on and so forth. So we have that love, that affection. But the reason of that is because we are a parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is ultimately love. So that energy is coming out And unless we are not using it in a proper way, we're going to direct it in, you know, in kind of a material direction. And then Srila Prabhupada is saying, yes, that if we don't love Krishna, if we don't direct that loving propensity to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we're going to, you know, it's going to be ahamameti, it's going to be directed to myself. I'm going to be selfish. I'm still loving something, I'm loving myself. But it's going to be kind of dry. It's not going to get out, it's not going to expand and like that. And Srila Prabhupada is making a point in this Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, verse number 7, where he says that it doesn't mean that devotees, you know, when they become Krishna conscious, they just simply want to transcend the world, or renouncement, vairagya. Janatyatyasu vairagyam, gyanam chayad ahaitukam. Vairagya. When we start to direct our loving propensity to the Supreme, we are not just becoming transcendentalists in the sense of forgetting the material world, transcending the material world, neglecting the material world, looking at it as Maya, like that. That's not real renunciation. And that was the lesson that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was pounding all the time. Yukta Vairagya. Don't renounce anything. It doesn't belong to you in the first place. Use that in Krishna service. Be active. Be in the world. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was very much in the world. Before he went to Calcutta, he was living in Mayapur, and he was very happy. I mean, he was very happy there. He was chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He had taken a vow chanting 1 billion names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. 1 billion names. Because his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, had also taken the vow. 1 billion names. And then he had given the japa to Bhaktisiddhanta and then chant 1 billion names. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was always very attached to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was very happy chanting Mayapur. It wasn't fancy like today, you know, with the big guest houses and everything. It was just hot. You know, he was living very simply. People were coming from Calcutta because he was coming from a very aristocratic family, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was, you know, very high position in society. And he gave everything up and he was sitting in Mayapur chanting Hare Krishna. So people were just one, and his friends, you know, from Calcutta, what are you doing? You know, everybody was into careers, getting into the civil service, competing and getting money, opulence, respect. And he was there chanting Hare Krishna. I mean, it didn't make sense. But in those days, like, when somebody did that, people were kind of respecting that. You know, he must have something special, you know, to offer. So they were going to him. And he was studying, he was writing his books, you know, a very sattvic life. And then devotees were some of the people that he attracted and became his disciple and followers. They were telling him, but if you stay here in Mayapur, that's fine, but you're not what you have to say, your practice of devotional service, your everything will not come out. You have to come to Calcutta. That's a real, where the real action is. And then there's a long story, but which we don't have the time to hear, but ultimately he decided to do that. And then he built the Bagh Bazar, the marble temple, that's in the north side of Calcutta. That was in the middle of the Hindu area, the black town of Calcutta, where the Bhadralok, the middle class, was living. Vivekananda was not far from there. So he built the marble temple like a skyscraper, pointing to the sky. You've seen pictures of it, maybe it's like a skyscraper, so that everybody from a long distance could see the temple of Radha and Krishna and be reminded about Krishna. And then he, even in the last days of his life, when he was very sick, and he knew he was leaving the world, 6 months before he left, he was telling, it's time for me to go. He chose to leave his body in Calcutta. He didn't go to Vrindavan. He didn't go to Mayapur. He went to Calcutta. His place of preaching, his place of dharma, his Dattadesh, his place of preaching, and he left his body there.
So in this way, he was always preaching that even if you are a devotee, you are transcendentalists, but we are not transcendentalists in the transcendental sense that we are kind of flying, you know, by Kunta Airlines above the earth. We are not touching the earth. We are always, you know, above everything. He was teaching the lesson that, no, be here, be with the people, do what you have to do, but whatever you do, do it in a mood of serving Krishna, preaching Krishna consciousness, being a good example. Just be a good example of a good human being. Be honest, be truthful. People will be attracted by that. That you're not corrupted, you're not cheating them, you know. You're honest. Just honesty nowadays is such, is so valuable. So in this way we can be Krishna conscious and serve Krishna in many varieties of ways. So yesterday when I was looking at Radha Desh from the distance, I saw this wonderful castle. I mean, it's really impressive when you come, you know, and I see visitors, you know, the French. Last day was say bonjour to some guests. They appreciated that. So then they're kind of looking at the castle, and it's kind of very impressive. So I was kind of thinking, wow, this castle has a, you know, has a special, there is something special there, because this is the castle of a queen. You know, like in the Middle Ages, you had these stories about the queen and the castle and the towers, and, you know, medieval stories. And the queen of the castle is Srimati Radharani. So, and everything, this is Radha Desh, everything here is imbued by the mood of serving Srimati Radharani, who is the best servant of Krishna. So, so therefore here there is a very special atmosphere, very conducive for Krishna consciousness. And as I say, I'm very glad I spend a week here, and I will try to bring that mood with me and never forget that. So thank you very much for your association and everything, and see you probably next year again. Hare Krishna. Do you have any questions? We are a bit late now, but any comments or anything what to add or Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.